The Nail in the Coffin!
It's The Nail in the Coffin, part of the world-famous Evergreen Podcast Network. Trav, what's going on, man?
Tino, buddy, how are you, my man? It's been a while.
It has been a long time, but it's good to be back in the saddle. Busy weekend with the kid. We wrapped up the softball season over here, and just in time to start cheerleading season now, so it never stops.
Oh, yeah, I believe it. It's weird. This summer, like, we haven't had a ton to talk about, but I feel like in comparison to last year, it's like night and day difference. It's so weird. There's so much stuff going on.
Yeah, everything's happening. It's all happening. So it's good to be busy, I guess. Yeah, here we are. And speaking of being busy, the Indians were busy on Friday morning informing us that when they take the field in 2022, they are going to have a new name, the Guardians. They're going to be the Cleveland Guardians. And you might have heard something about this. I think a couple people around town might have had an opinion here in the last couple days.
Yeah, I think it qualified as news. Yeah, kind of a wild thing that it came to. Like the Tom Hanks video, I thought was kind of funny. Like maybe a little bit melodramatic for what it is, but I enjoyed that. Anytime you can get Tom Hanks, you got to get him. You got to get him on the track, right?
Yeah, it was you got Tom Hanks narrating. You got the Black Keys with the soundtrack. It was a well-produced video. I was a little surprised that, you know, because there was that story, I think, that broke like the day before that said the Indians had chosen a name, but they weren't going to say what it was yet. And I texted one of our friends. I said, they better get it out quick because I guarantee you that's going to leak if they wait too long.
Spoiler, and, I was that friend.
Oh, that was you? Okay.
That was me. Yeah, it was me who done that.
Fair enough. We've had a lot of conversations in the last few days.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's funny because as you said it, I was like, wait a minute, someone said that to me. And I was like, oh, okay, that's right. It was Tino. That's right. That all makes sense now. Okay.
There it is.
Yeah, yeah, and you were right. Like, they had to get it. If it was out there, there was someone that knew. And if they waited much longer, it would have gotten out anyways. And they wouldn't have had the opportunity to produce this great video with Tom Hanks. So you got to do it when you have the opportunity.
Yeah, I don't think they necessarily rushed it out because I don't think you could have had all the materials put together for a presentation like that quickly. Obviously, it's been in the works for a while, whether it was the video or all the graphics and the whole nine yards with the
rollout. You wouldn't know it by some of the graphics.
We'll get into that later. I think there were a lot of people around town that, for obvious reasons, I think were pretty passionate about the fact that this finally marks the nail in the coffin, if you will, for the Indians' name. I know I talked to neighbors, family, friends over the weekend, and people had strong opinions about it. I was at SmackDown on Friday night, and John Cena made a really, really awkward joke about changing his middle name to Guardians, and there were about 10,000 people at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, and I would say probably 90% of them booed. So
it was a joke, like the funny kind, but different.
Yeah, something like that. So they might have an uphill battle with this one, but I don't have a ton to say about the Indians' name going away. We've known this was coming for a really long time, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's the fact that they decided to change the name didn't surprise anyone. There were some like weird rumblings not that long ago that like, well, maybe after they do their research, they'll just stick with Indians. And you and I were in agreement. We're like, no, that toothpaste is out of the tube. Like, they're moving on. What they move on to is, you know, yet to be seen. But
no,
they were not going to be the Indians.
Once they announced last summer that they were doing a review of their brand identity.
Yeah, that was it.
Basically the equivalent of an employee struggling at work being put on a performance improvement plan. The writing is on the wall.
Yeah, it's the It's the vote of confidence that a coach gets from the owner, right?
Their days are numbered. Much maligned, yeah.
Right. Their days are numbered. And so I don't know. I mean, there were some names that I liked, some names I didn't like. I'll be honest, I'm really glad it wasn't Spiders. I just thought Spiders was terrible. I know that seemed to be the most polarizing and probably had the strongest, like the most support behind it of the names that were out there, but I don't know. I didn't like it. Every concept I saw of Spiders seemed very like Mickey Mouse and arena football. Not that the Guardian stuff is all that much better, but yeah. And so I'll tell you the one thing that like jumped out at me. And as I started to think about it, it's like, there aren't any teams that we really call. If it's more than one syllable, we don't call them by that name, right? For the Indians forever, no one ever said go Indians. I don't think I ever heard anyone call them, you know, the Indians. It was always the tribe. For the Buckeyes, everyone says go Bucks. For the Cavaliers, everyone says go Cavs. You can't really shorten the Guardians that well. I'm sure we will probably force something out there, but
it'll happen organically. I mean,
naturally it will happen. But
when the Indians name was introduced, I don't think they co-introduced tribe. I think that was something that just kind of organically developed among the fans over the years. I mean, I could see Guards or something like that.
When Indians was introduced, they just used like mocking Native American war calls. So they found other ways around it.
I suppose.
But it's, I don't know. Yeah, something will happen, I'm sure. And I think when it became Quicken Loans Arena, I don't know that we all thought the Q would stick, and it kind of has. I think it's kind of stupid, but it has stuck for better or worse. So it'll be interesting to see how that sort of evolves, I guess.
Now it's the Romo Fijo. So,
whoa.
Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse.
Whoa. That's a lot. Does anyone call it that?
I believe the folks on the Alan Cox show on WMMS came up with that.
Okay. So. They should probably put that one back in the box. But yeah, so you know, it's weird. I don't hate the name. I do find it funny how many people are like, "Oh yeah, it's really Cleveland. I've seen those statues my whole life." I'm like, "Yeah, you didn't know that they were called anything until like 2 years ago."
Right.
So like, people that act like these were this like peak Cleveland identity landmark, I think rings a little disingenuous.
I've got a lot more thoughts on the direction they chose to go with going forward, but I did have a couple thoughts as we kind of put a bow on the whole Indians moniker. You know, I a lot of people were upset that, you know, that name's going away, and you know, I think when you really think about the Dolans ownership tenure, they're the longest tenured owners in the history of the franchise, and how they've handled the controversy around the name and the logos with the team. I think that's along with payroll and the fact that the team's always pretty good, but never been quite good enough to win the whole thing, come close. I think those are like probably the three defining stories of their tenure in charge of the franchise. And, you know, this is something, yeah, they announced that formal review last summer, and then they announced they were going to change the team name in, I think it was December. But, I mean, you know, if you're having a hard time letting go of the Indians name, they've done you a solid with how they've done this. Because this whole process, I mean, you could really trace this back 13 years. I was looking through, like, some of their logo history and things like that. They first put a block C on one of their hats in the Dolan era, that is, back in 2008 on one of their uniforms. All the other hats were still Wahoo, you know, Indians on the, you know, home uniform. And
the terrible script eye hat for a while.
This replaced debacle. That. They got rid of those vest uniforms, and they got those cream colored alternates with the first block C hat. And then a few years after that, it was, okay, now we're going to put block C on the primary road uniforms. But even then, like, what's the one thing we've known about the Indians in the last 25 years? If they're playing a big game on the road, they're wearing their alternates. They always wore the blue. So, you know, yeah, okay, the gray uniforms now have got a block C hat. No big deal. Well, then it was, okay, now we're going to go a little further. Now we're just going to have one helmet for all the games. It's going to be the block C. And then a couple years after that, it was, okay, we're going to switch our logo designation. So now the C is technically our primary, air quotes here, but we're still keeping Wahoo. We're still going to have Wahoo on the hats and on the jersey sleeves. And then a few years after that, it was, okay, now we're going to remove Wahoo from the hats and the jersey sleeves. But don't worry, we're still selling Wahoo merchandise. We're still going to be called the Indians. And then they do that review last summer. They announced the name change plan last winter. And even now, we get to the point where they're rolling out the new identity, and it's still the same colors. They've still got a script logo that looks not exactly the same, but pretty similar to the old one. The uniforms aren't going to be much different because they're basically just going to be plugging in the new logos and word marks where the old ones were. So I don't know what the opposite phrase is for ripping off the Band-Aid, but this is the polar opposite of that. So we've had plenty of time to adjust and prepare for this. The writing's been on the wall for a long time. And, you know, I know that there's, you know, the folks who are like, you know, well, where do we draw the line in this stuff? Here. Here's where we draw the line. We draw the line here. If enough people spend the next 40 years protesting the name Browns outside of First Energy Stadium, then in 2061, you and I can jump back on here and I'll say it's time to change the name of the Browns as well. I mean, look, this argument over what their name should be and you know, whether they should keep the Indians name or not, it was never going away. That's the one thing, and I think you and I have talked about this before, it was just never going to go away. I mean, it kept happening year after year after year. And if you were in the keep the Indians camp, your best case scenario was getting a chance to have the same argument again next year. And I know for me personally, it just got to a point where it's just not worth it anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think, like, I don't know, like you said, it was one of these things that honestly, I don't know that anyone can really put a strong case together as to why they were so adamant and so passionate about this name. And all these people that are like, oh, well, if they're not called Indians, I'm not rooting for them anymore. It's like, okay, well, okay. You're probably a relatively shitty fan to begin with. Like,
so to that end, okay. So a good friend of mine, neighbor I was talking with over the weekend, had said, you know, they're not going to be this, I'm not going to games anymore. They're still going to watch. They were still really bummed out, though, about the name change, because for them it was that historical connection to the Indians name and remembering watching, you know, in the 90s when we're growing up with like Bell and Baerga and Kenny Lofton, and you know, those were the names and those were the, and, you know, that was the team name and those were the uniforms and that was what you know, developed a connection to. I sympathize with that. I'm with that. And I think it's important to, you know, emphasize, and I think the team has done this, that even though they're changing the name, you're not erasing history here, and you shouldn't. You know, the Indians played in the 1995 and 97 and 2016 World Series. You know, I'm going to roll my eyes really hard if I see some announcer saying, oh yeah, when the Guardians played in the 97 World Series. No, they didn't. The Indians played in the World Series. You know, it wasn't the Guardians making all of that history that made you love the team. It was the Indians, and it's okay to say that. And
but,
you know,
but at the same time, it wasn't really like it was the Cleveland baseball team.
It
didn't matter that they were called the Indians. If they were from another city, you wouldn't have given a shit. It was the fact that it was the Cleveland baseball team. That's name true. Doesn't matter. Like okay. I get the nostalgic connection to it.
Well, they,
when I, yeah, when I was a kid, I loved having a Wahoo hat. Like, I loved it. I thought it was the best thing, right? I get that side of it, but it doesn't matter what they were called then. And like you said, you don't have to pretend that didn't happen.
Yeah,
you can still remember that stuff fondly. But if the only reason you remember it fondly is not because Albert Bell was a sociopath and like all the good things that happened on the field, but the fact that they were called the Indians, like, what are you even doing here?
Right.
Because that's honest, Indians is not really that great of a nickname in the first place.
You know, I think we can all recognize that name, that logo, that identity for the team was a product of that time. And we don't have to pretend like that didn't exist. Now, the team makes the World Series in 2023. I'm going to say the Guardians are in the World Series. Because that's what they're going to be called starting next year. So, you know, it's okay to move on. But, do you think you were starting to get into this before? Do you think they got it right with the going with Guardians? I know you don't like spiders, but
personally,
how do we
no.
feel about Guardians? No?
I like it more than spiders. I don't hate it. I think it's a little like, and this is maybe unavoidable, right? Because it's a 100-plus-year-old franchise and they're trying to just give it a new name. It feels a little like artificial to me. And I don't think there's a way. I mean, I'm sure there is. Someone will probably come up with something. I don't think they've done it yet. But I kind of wanted a name that could feel a little more like a little more timeless, a little more classical, a little more like traditional, and have almost a vintagey type feel to it, which is part of why I personally liked Commodores. I liked that you could tie the nautical aspect into Lake Erie. It aligned with like the minor league teams, the Clippers and the Captains. And I thought you could do some really good like branding ideas that weren't super like in your face, that could be more like toned down. And so that was the one that I liked the most. I haven't seen anything from Guardians that tells me that it's going to feel that way, but you know, it's still early. I'm sure they'll come up with stuff.
I think that's going to take time, because if a basketball team was named the Cavaliers, you know, in 2021 for the first time, I think, you know, what the hell does a Cavalier have to do with Cleveland? But you know, now it, because they've been around for over 50 years, it just kind of rolls off your tongue. The Cleveland Cavaliers, the Cavs, it's what we've always known. That's one of those things I think it takes time. The Commodores, the tie-in with the minor league teams, I had not given that any thought. I mean, I guess you could even kind of theoretically tie in the Rubber Ducks with that as well. They're floating on the water there. It's a bathtub, but...
And the one thing, like, I don't know, the one thing that isn't like rock and roll... And you don't really have to explain, I feel like Rockers was clearly, in my opinion, the worst of them all. I'm glad that they didn't get sucked into that. But the one thing that everyone knows about Cleveland is that it's on Lake Erie. If you look up history of Lake Erie, the Battle of Lake Erie was very notable. Commodore Perry is well known as like a very, a very important historical figure that Cleveland embraces to an extent. Like, he's a guy that most people have heard of, and outside of Cleveland, it doesn't require a ton of explanation. The idea that we're going to, you know, tell everyone, oh yeah, we got these statues on a bridge going to the stadium that are called Guardians, and so it's after that, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was really glad that we don't see a logo with a guitar.
Oh god.
That felt inevitable in some respects, and I'm glad it didn't happen.
I was nervous.
Shout out to the Cavs, by the way, for the All-Star Game logo that they've got for next winter that also does not have the guitar. They went with the Terminal Tower motif, which I thought was pretty cool. Really limited on what they could do with that, and they made the best of within the confines they were working with. Speaking of the Cavs, they actually were the first ones to do something with the Guardians of Transportation Bridge. You remember the first city edition, LeBron's last year here, that the pattern down the side of those was inspired by those statues on the bridge.
See, that I would be more on board with, just having it as like a subtle like note in there. Right. I don't know that the whole branding thing should be built around it.
It would have helped, I think, to have a better visual identity and all this.
Yeah, the logos and the stuff they came out with did not do them any favors.
No, I'm fine with the name. I think I'm more fine with the name than you are. But the visual, you know, package here, the word mark that's going to go on the jerseys, the logos, felt like they had competing priorities. Number one, it was like, we can't have anything problematic anymore, but we also want to have a look and feel that is as close to what we had previously as possible, which is why you have a Guardian script that kind of looks like the Indians, only a little bit more angular, I guess, and Somebody even pointed out with that Wing G baseball logo that if you like
that one's the worst.
It, yeah,
everything else I could live with. That one just looked terrible.
If you turn it like clockwise 45 degrees or something, it like sort of resembles the shape of Chief Wahoo. I'm like, you're trying a little too hard there.
My favorite one was the one who like said it looked like the wings and Polly Walnuts from Sopranos hair. Just fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. That's in its favor then. That's, I think part of it for me was when they said they wanted a new identity that was completely detached from everything that got them to this point where they felt like they had to make a change. I thought they were going to go for a more complete break, and it just seems like they prioritized keeping as much of the old look as they possibly could. And
I did honestly, say, like I said to you last week, like the Dolans are cheap crowd probably had a field day with the fact that they kept the same five letters at the end of the name. Like they only have to replace a few letters on each sign.
Stop.
Like, I felt like that was a really obvious joke, and it took a little bit for anyone else on Twitter to make it. So yeah. I felt like I was a little ahead of it, but and I'm not one of the Dolans or cheap people, so obviously I'm saying that with tongue firmly in cheek, but it was just, I don't know, I felt like it was like 80% done.
Yeah, it just it really seems like and one idea that I saw thrown out there was they don't want the stadium next year. If you got a bunch of people showing up in Indians gear, it's going to look kind of bad on TV if you roll out a new identity that's a completely different color scheme.
I don't think they have to worry about a whole lot of people showing up in any gear.
That's, yeah. Maybe just kind of getting people to not feel like all of their old merchandise is entirely obsolete. And I would not be surprised if within the next 5 to 10 years, they at a minimum add like another accent color, or they add more logos, you know, like alternate logos, or just do something to kind of evolve this. And, you know, because everything about this, as I was laying out that whole timeline before, has been as deliberate as possible. So, this is like the big watershed moment where they finally changed the name, but like that evolution of what the Cleveland baseball team looks like, I think we've still got steps to go. So I don't think that's necessarily an entirely finished product, but
we'll see. I mean, ultimately, I don't care all that much. Like, even if it was Spiders and Spiders was the one that had the most momentum and I didn't really care for it, I wasn't going to care that much. Right. I want a team that I like watching. Like, that's my primary concern, is a team that I think is competitive every year. Yeah. The most part, they have been this year, notwithstanding. In fairness, they've been relatively competitive, which was stunning considering the roster that they trotted out and the injuries they've had to deal with and all that
it's
stuff.
It's been a season from hell with injuries. So
yeah, and they've still managed to not embarrass themselves. Obviously, I don't know. I don't see them doing much the rest of the way here. I'd say they're probably done, but. So they've still overachieved it a little bit, so that's plenty for me. The whole I'm not going to go to these games if they're not the Indians. Well, no one was going to the fucking games anyways. Like,
judging by the attendance,
don't bullshit me.
Yet.
Like, it's just one of these other things. Like, people just constantly finding stuff to bitch about. It was like, oh, well, if the Indians suck, why am I going to go to these games? It's okay. Well, the Indians, they win 100. They win 100 games to go to the World Series. Oh, well, they're not spending any money. They added like $50 million in payroll over the course of 2 years. Oh, it's this. Dolans are cheap. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, you just aren't going to go. And that's okay. Like, I'm not going to tell anybody how to spend their money. Like, if you don't think it's worth it to you, don't do it. But
don't pretend like it's for reasons.
Don't pretend just say you don't want to spend money going to a baseball game.
Yeah.
Don't pretend that you're this awesome fan and you have all these other reasons that you don't go to games. Like I love the Indians. I like going to baseball games every once in a while. I'll go to a couple a year and that's pretty much it. Not one of these people who can go every night, but I'm also not criticizing anybody. And I'm not like looking at, let's be honest, for the last, and this is going off on a bit of a tangent here. The Indians are what we would have loved the Browns, or the Cavs are a little unique, obviously, because they won, and outside of the LeBron time, they've been terrible, but we would kill for that sort of like stability and ownership for the other teams in town.
Mm-hmm.
But we, for whatever reason, because unfortunately the one league that the Dolans are in is the one without a salary cap. So they're kind of, you know, at the mercy of their market to an extent, but like the team's incredibly well run, and there's 15 other small market teams in the league that wish they had the Indians leadership. And so people that are going to complain about stuff like the team name and all this other garbage, like, I don't know.
That for me was, I'm just glad that we're going to finally be able to get to a point where we can stop having this argument over like whether the name should change or not. It just, it's the same argument every year. Everybody makes the same points on both sides every year. Nobody changes their mind, and round we go.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just really nice that, you know, once this change finally goes into effect after this season's over, and, you know, they take the field next year with a different name and different uniforms, we can finally just focus on normal baseball things like Jose Ramirez is awesome. Shane Bieber is one of the best pitchers in baseball. We bunt too damn much. You know, we could talk about our players and baseball strategy and normal baseball things, and we don't have to waste time and oxygen on, you know, is our logo offensive? I can't do it anymore, and I'm really glad I won't have to.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, we spent limited time on it because I think you and I, like, were less invested in the team name than we were in the team.
Right.
And so, you know, it was just sort of one of these things like, okay, this will happen eventually, whatever. But yeah, I'm with you. I think it's like, if you like the baseball team in Cleveland, guess what? They're still the baseball team in Cleveland. You can still watch them and bitch about their payroll and not go to the games as much as you did before. Like, nothing has changed except the name on the jersey. So,
that's right.
Whatever. I'm exhausted talking about it now, and it's over. So,
that's true. Well, hey, you know what? We won't have to do it anymore. But let's talk about other uniforms. The Browns have decided to get in on the action this weekend as well. They rolled out their 75th anniversary uniform. You had a good observation about this before we started recording. Would you like to share that with the masses?
Yeah, so it feels to me and it looks to me like what the prior jerseys should have been. I not so affectionately refer to the other ones as the FUBU jerseys. It's got like the really sort of over the top, like bright drop shadow on the numbers. It's got what the other one did really poorly, this one does really well. And if we had this one, what is it, 6 years ago now? 7 years ago? When did the old ones come out? I don't know. Whenever the old ones came out. Yeah, okay, so 6 years ago. If we had that one then, I don't know that we would have been so pissed off and clamoring for new ones.
Yeah.
It's worlds better. I don't know how I feel about the number on the helmet thing. Like, generally I like that, but I don't know how I feel about brown number, white stripe, that look.
Mm-hmm.
I get that that's what the helmet was back 75 years ago or whatever, but I don't know how I love that, but the jerseys I think are incredible. I like the numbers. I like the design, and I'm in on it. I like it a lot.
Yeah. It's good. Look, it sounds like they're going to wear them for a few games this year. I don't know if this is just a 1 year thing for the 75th anniversary, or if, you know, a lot of teams, when they roll out a throwback, they end up keeping them for a few years. I don't think you could come out with a different throwback within, like, you know, back-to-back years. I think once you pick a design, you're kind of stuck with that one for a while.
Little bit.
So, I don't know, maybe they'd wear these more after this year, or maybe they just will get away from throwbacks in general. But, yeah, it's a good look, and Browns are on a real roll, I feel like, with all their branding and just everything with their look since they brought out the new set last year.
I'll throw this question at you. How do you think they'd be received if the Browns were coming into the season looking like they're a front runner for the first overall pick?
I don't, that's a good question.
We've seen a lot, obviously. I think even in hindsight, most of the old redesign like uniforms have been dog shit. So I don't know that it's so much that the team was terrible when they came out, but I gotta personally, I mean, I have to think that the fact that everybody is very pumped up and excited about the Browns this year gives them a little bit of goodwill to work with when that comes out.
It helps. It definitely helps. I feel like I'd probably be saying, like, if we played half as good as we looked, we could probably be like a 500 team. But yeah,
this jersey will look a lot better on this team in 2021 than it would have looked on the Browns in 2013 or whatever.
Right.
So naturally, yes, the uniforms are going to look better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good times for the Browns here. I'm excited. We'll be talking obviously a lot more about them as we get into training camp and the preseason, which, man, is just not that far away. It's crazy. But
yeah, it is rapidly approaching.
Yeah.
This is Alex Hastie, the host of Ohio versus the World, an American history podcast. On Ohio vs. the World, we'll travel back in time with the authors, historians, and even witnesses to visit the most exciting, consequential, and too often overlooked topics that have shaped America's history. There seems to be an Ohio connection to so many important moments.
When you said Ohio versus the World, we did some damage.
So join us and we'll take a deep dive to enlighten, educate, and entertain you as Ohio vs. the World makes history fun again.
All right, we are a little over a half an hour in, and there was one more topic I wanted to talk with you about. I think you've got much stronger feelings about this than I do. Football season has not really officially started yet, but it certainly seems like college football right now is being turned upside down on its head with, between the, players getting their endorsement money. And now really, especially I think what's really shaking things up are all these realignment talks that are going on, especially with Oklahoma and Texas going to the SEC. And, I'm just kind of curious, you are the biggest college football fan I think I know. How are you feeling right now?
I'm not encouraged about the future. Truthfully, I'm not encouraged and I don't want to be melodramatic. Like over the top about it. I'm not encouraged about the future of the sport. I think it is devolving into, and I shouldn't say devolving. I think this has probably been a long time coming and this is just another step in that direction. I think it is quickly moving away from what I have always loved about college football. It's becoming sort of an NFL light, in my opinion. It is all about making the best TV product, making the most money for the teams in power. And that's not a new thing in and of itself, right? I have no problem with like the name, image, and likeness stuff. Like these kids are finally able to make a little bit of money off of who they are. Good for them. Like, God bless them. No problem with that whatsoever. But in my opinion, college football has always been, and I saw a guy on The Athletic today, like, I read an article and I thought there was a point in there that sort of captured, in my opinion, what made college football really awesome and sort of unique and different than the NFL or these other ones. Because there's a lot of fan bases out there that would rather win some stupid, goofy rivalry trophy than like a national championship. That means more to them. And that's maybe a little bit oversimplification, but all of these things that have made like college football very unique is, even bad teams, like teams that aren't in the national championship hunt, they're still like, they still have things that they're playing for. And I think as these conferences start to devolve and break up, and it's going to be the haves and have nots is not a new thing in college football, but it's going to be more apparent. And those other teams are going to be sort of left by the wayside. And to an extent, that's okay. But I think between conference realignment and the expanding playoff system, it's turning away from what separated college football from other sports. Like, everybody loves March Madness, right? We know like March Madness is a ton of fun. No one watches college basketball during the regular season.
Right.
No one cares. Every year we get on here and you watch some of OU and I watch some of Ohio State, but I don't talk to anybody. Like, I talk to a lot of people about sports. I don't know anybody who, when it comes to March Madness, really has a really good, like, really good feel for who's good. Save like a few people on like Twitter who really, really are into college basketball.
I was
going to
say,
right?
Or the beat writers who are being paid to cover it.
Right, those people, right? But yeah. I think we can all acknowledge that college basketball's regular season, not that great. Because all anybody wants to do is get to March Madness. I feel like college football is moving that direction. Especially, I have a bigger problem with expanding the playoff than I do with conference realignment. But I think they're just sort of going to run together and they're going to be these sort of, I don't know, slippery slope of things that are just going to constantly change and shift the overall dynamic of the sport to where it's not these really intense like regional rivalries and all these things that have made it, in my opinion, the best regular season in sports. I think we're probably past the point of no return already with that, which is unfortunate in my opinion. And I think they're going to realize probably later down the road that just going all in to make a bunch of money may cost them long term, because I think the sport as a whole will become less appealing to a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, there's that dystopian, you know, commoditize everything as much as you can and just wring it for every last drop that you can get out of it. And when you've gotten everything you can, you just kind of kick it by the wayside and move on to the next thing. And you could, you know, for the longest time, I always felt like the end point of where we were going was that the Power Five conferences were going to kind of break off at their own level from, you know, the Group of Five,
and
whatever. And, you know, if anything, what I feel like what we're seeing now, I still think there's going to be a group that breaks off. But I think it's going to be much smaller.
Than the Power Five. I totally agree.
It's going to be like maybe half the Power Five. If you're like one of those teams that's perennially in the bottom half of those conferences, unless you get a booster who's willing to just spend like a drunken sailor on endorsement deals for players, I don't know how you're digging yourself out of that right now.
No.
Which actually kind of makes me, that was the other thing I was going to ask you about. Do you see the power structure in college football changing based on programs that might have more spend happy boosters, so to speak? Like, do you
Name
think
it
Ohio
with
State
an NIL stuff?
Yeah, like, do you think, you know, I mean, it's kind of a understood and or you know, recognized that college football is like a borderline religion in the South, and you know, I'm sure there are you know, people who are supporting Alabama, you know, car dealerships and everything else down there, who are going to be, you know, striking deals for players. And that's going to make some of those programs down there even more appealing than they are now. Do you see, you know, the community around Ohio State matching that and, you know, not losing any ground?
Maybe. Like, I don't know. It really depends. Like, you look at Alabama, and there was the other day, Saban said something about how Bryce Young, I'm not sure what class he is. I'm not sure if he's a freshman or sophomore or whatever he is, but the guy's expected to be their quarterback this year.
Mm-hmm.
Said he's making close to $1 million in endorsement deals, which I thought about. I was like, wow, that's a crazy number. And then thought about it a little longer. I'm like, I'm also pretty sure it's bullshit, because if companies were going to pay him $1 million, we'd probably see him in something by now. They'd probably want him actually promoting their product.
Well, I would wait and see, like, you know, once we get into the season.
Why would you wait? If you're giving him that much money, why would you wait to get him out there?
Well,
like, I personally, I think Saban probably inflated that number quite a bit, because that's something he can go tell recruits. I don't think there's any chance he's making that much money. Now he might make.
Well, the other thing though is those boosters.
I imagine he'll make quite a bit, but
I mean, we've talked about you know, bag men and $100 handshakes and things like that forever. I mean, just because they aren't appearing in commercials for, you know, businesses or whatnot, I mean, those boosters really, you know, for them, maybe the benefit isn't that, hey, player X is endorsing my company. It's hey, I was responsible for getting player X to be the quarterback of my team on Saturday afternoons, or I'm sorry, on Saturday primetime, because we can't have big games in the afternoon anymore unless you're on Fox on the big noon. But, you know, I don't think necessarily that not appearing in commercials is, especially, you know, a month before the season starts, I wouldn't necessarily think that's a smoking gun in and of itself.
I don't know. I think if someone was going to give him that much money, he'd be working for him by now. Wouldn't be waiting for the season or anything like that. They'd want to get their money's worth. But truthfully, it doesn't really matter.
Their money's worth. Like, that's what I'm saying, though. Their money's worth is making sure that player goes to the school that I want him to go to. If I'm opening up my checkbook, it's, hey,
he's already getting at that school.
Right. But, you know, you can use that sort of thing in recruiting to be like, hey, we're going to help set you up with, you know, these deals. And, you know, you know, maybe not immediately this year, but if you're like a kid that's going to be making a decision in the next year or two and you see, hey, this kid, he hasn't even played it down on the field yet. And all of a sudden he's already making $1 million because that's how they take care of you at Alabama. Yeah.
Well, that wouldn't be okay. You can't just give him $1 million.
You understand what I'm saying, though.
I do, but no, I still think, like, yes, I think Saban saying that is for that exact purpose. Like, if you come here, you can make this much money. I think he's full of shit. I don't think he's making it. Not to denigrate that he's probably got himself some pretty nice little opportunities. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
I don't think he's sniffing $1 million. Because truthfully, at the end of the day, too, as big as Alabama is football wise, they're still like a regional brand. They're not a national brand. They don't have alumni all over the country who are passionate Alabama fans willing to spend money on Alabama product. Like, if and it depends how many things he did, and we're spending too much time on this one deal, but like, I don't have a huge problem with the NIL stuff. I think that was far more about recruiting than it was about actually telling us that Bryce Young is making a lot of money. I think that is very minor in the grand scheme in terms of how it impacts college football. But I think you're right that what Pryor may have been, you know, we're going to have 60-ish teams that are all Power 5 teams, and they're going to have their own thing, and the haves and have-nots are finally going to separate. And I said that, I think I said it a couple of years ago, what I thought should happen is the Power 5 should make their own division, and then the Group of 5 should be their own division, and we need to stop pretending that they're on the same level and that they should be competing for the same titles. Like, that's never made sense, in my opinion.
If they made that split a couple years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, would any of what's happening now be happening still anyway? Was this an inevitable?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know, because I have to think if they went that way, depends what they did with the playoff, because truthfully, right now, they're just printing more and more money by adding games to the postseason. And it's wild. I said this to my buddy today, like, it wasn't that long ago that I was, you know, I was pumped and like really excited to see Ohio State play, I don't know, some random team. I can't even think of who they've played in, like in the Fiesta Bowl. It was a game with no real stakes. It didn't actually matter. It shows you how much it actually mattered in the grand scheme. I can't remember who they played. I know they played like Texas and they played Notre Dame and won. And like, but those were a big deal. Like making a BCS bowl was a big deal. It wasn't a national championship, but it was still like, okay, this can like redeem the season. That's like going to be gone for a lot of teams. Like Ohio State missing the playoff is going to be a failure of a season. And that's it. That's all they're going to be judged on. And I don't know that that's good. I don't know that it's that binary of a system now for college football, where most of these teams are only evaluated on that one sort of thing. And for teams like Alabama and Ohio State, it's not just going to be making the playoff. You got to win in the playoff too. So it's, I don't know. And like I said earlier, it takes away from the regular season too, because like, yeah, I can look back at Ohio State games from recent years, right? The blowout loss to Iowa or Purdue, like games like that, those games sucked in real time. And yes, if you asked me during that game, like, would you rather have like a do-over? Do you think like Ohio State deserves like another shot. Are they still one of the best teams? Do they still belong in the playoff? I probably would have said yeah. Like, it'd be great if they got a mulligan, they got a do-over, and we could just forget that that game ever happened. But every other league and every other sport, you lose one game during the regular season, you can always make up for it. College football is the only one where if you lose one game, it feels like you have to recalibrate. You have to decide if you're still playing for the same things you were playing for before. If you're lucky, you can get a do-over, but you definitely don't get two.
Yeah.
Now, if we expand into like 12, I was looking, there's only 1 year since the new playoff came out in 2014, there's only been 1 year where a three-loss team would not have made a playoff if there were 12 teams.
Hmm.
I'm sorry, if you lose three games during the regular season, you don't deserve another chance. I think if you lose two, you don't really deserve a chance. And one of my buddies I was texting, he's like, no, it gives more teams a chance to prove whether they're, you know, the best team or not. I'm like, no, they proved three times. They had three chances to prove they were the best team, and they failed.
Yeah.
I don't think it's good for the sport. And I think, like, if I'm walking away from blowout losses to, like, Iowa and Purdue, like, eh, whatever, you know, we can make up for it. We'll be fine. That's not – that takes away from how, in my opinion, how special the regular season is and the one thing that sets college football apart from the NFL.
So I want to shift gears a little bit. I know that the talk was that Texas and Oklahoma are going to the SEC here at some point in the next couple of years. Is there a counter move for the Big Ten?
I think the move is not necessarily to expand the conference, but to create like a more, I'll say like a strategic alliance, like align with the Pac-12 or align with the ACC. I don't think there's two teams that they can add that are going to come even close to matching. Mm-hmm. To matching Texas and Oklahoma. But I think if they can create something, the Pac-12 would be well served because they're just getting killed by playing, you know, all those late games. I think that's been brutal for them. And if they can create something that, you know, sort of tags along with the Rose Bowl, but expands like the overall reach of the two leagues, I think that could be something. I think they need to think outside of the reactive box of, oh, well, they expanded, so we need to expand.
Can I put on my conspiracy hat for a minute?
I love conspiracy hats. Why have you not been wearing it all show?
You know, the deal that I really think they ought to be making?
What's that?
Is putting their primary TV rights back with ESPN. So that ESPN has their full contract with them for football like they used to and get off of Fox as soon as that deal is up, because ESPN is the TV partner for the playoff. ESPN, I think either this year or next, is going to have the full TV rights for the SEC. They're taking that SEC.
2024.
Yeah, I would say that they're getting this package that's currently on CBS that's going to ESPN. ESPN's got the ACC, and, you know, watch what happens with the NHL this year now that the NHL is going back onto ESPN. You know, we saw what happened. The NHL became, for all intents and purposes, persona non grata on SportsCenter, other than like the absolute bare minimum. Once ESPN
I wouldn't get too rights. Far ahead on that. Like, they just the other day, the NHL draft was on like ESPN Plus.
Okay.
And I don't remember what garbage they were airing on ESPN, but it was
once
like,
they
oh,
start
this is
airing a- games and they need to start getting their ratings up for games. When your games are on ESPN networks, those other programs are there to help get you to watch more games that are airing on their networks. And I just, you know, you watch these talking head shows. Conspiracy theorist me, I think when you're the Fox conference and, you know, you're up for that last playoff spot or playoff positioning versus an ESPN conference, and ESPN's holding the remote to what channel you're going to be watching those games on, you know, talking heads on television during those studio shows, you know, they're spouting their opinions and it's shaping people's views. And it all plays into the bigger picture. And I think it would be advantageous for the Big Ten to have their games and be part of ESPN full throttle, like they were previously when the before they jumped over to Fox.
Maybe. Okay. I could see that. I honestly think has a little less significance than I thought it was going to. Originally when it first like came down that that's what was happening. Like when Big Ten first moved to Fox. But it also like you assume that ESPN would want the Big Ten.
Sure.
And so they just wrote a deal with the SEC that's, you know, a huge number. I don't know what they do now. Do they renegotiate that? Do they figure out new numbers for it with Texas and Oklahoma as part of it? I don't know. But
yeah, it's a good question. I mean, ESPN's had personalities leave over the years, but I mean, the inevitable rule with ESPN is if they want rights to something or they want to hire somebody, they always find the money in the couch cushions in Bristol without fail.
Yeah. But for as long as, I mean, as long as I can remember, recent memory, Big Ten's been per school has been bringing in quite a bit more than the SEC. And everyone talks about it. Like when the new SEC deal came out, everyone was, you know, going crazy, like, oh, SEC is going to pass the Big Ten. Well, it's like, no, the Big Ten was really smart a few years ago. Last time they set up their new TV agreement, they set up a shorter one. They set up only for 6 years, while most were doing like 10 years at that point, which means they're going to be up for negotiation again right around the time that that new SEC deal is starting up. And one thing we know, just it happens in pro sports with contracts. You never make less than the guy before you.
Sure.
You never seem to make less. Like that franchise quarterback this year, he might not be as good as the guy who signed his deal last year, but he's going to get more money. And that's just sort of the way it goes. I don't know for sure that ESPN would be willing to pony up that cash with what they're already going to be paying the SEC, while Fox might be. So I don't know. I don't know that your suggestion, while I get what you're saying, I don't know if that's feasible either.
Yeah.
Because they can look at it and be like, yeah, we're paying the SEC this, and the SEC, they got better teams. They're doing bigger numbers than you guys are. While Fox, right, they Big Ten can go to and be like, hey, you guys need fucking something to put on TV.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I wonder, though, like, you know, okay, SEC draws better. Well, if you put the ESPN hype machine behind the Big Ten to the same degree.
That's fair.
Maybe it changes in a few
years. Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. It'll be one of those things to follow. I don't know when the Big Ten is going to start pursuing that next deal either. That's the one question, right? They still got a couple years left, but the SEC, they locked theirs up years before they needed to. Sure. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. The times are changing, man. New name for the baseball team. We got college football. It's all up in the air, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a weird time. It's like I feel like a lot has happened in the last like few days for what is generally a relatively quiet time.
Well, it's given us something to talk about in late July, so that's nice. I'll take it. All right, man. Anything else on your mind?
Yeah, who do you want the Cavs to get?
Ooh. I think I tell you, you know, Evan Mobley seems to be the smart pick from everybody.
Seems to be where all the tea leaves are going this week.
And
that
definitely seems to be which direction the smoke seems to be blowing. And I know I'm just an uneducated rube who gets swept up by March Madness, but I'm not saying I want them to take him, but I think Jalen Suggs is going to be better in the NBA than people are giving him credit for. Everybody's marking him down as like a distinct tier below the other three. And I don't feel like the gap is that much. There were just plays that he made. I mean, everybody points to like that half court buzzer beater or whatever. And yeah, that was fun. But like that game against UCLA, and somebody tweeted it out yesterday, I think there was that sequence where he in one play blocked some guy at the rim, saved the ball from going out of bounds, brought it up the floor and threw about a 60-foot bounce pass in stride, hitting a guy for a dunk up ahead. And it's like, wow. Like, you know, it was just every skill on display. It was unbelievable. And I don't know. I thought he was a hell of a player. And, you know, I Cade Cunningham obviously has, you know, everybody excited. And then I know Detroit's like, oh, you know, we haven't decided yet. Yeah, you have. He's going to Detroit. And it seems like Jalen Green.
Pretty strongly markered in there.
Jalen Green seems like he's going to Houston, which is fine. I mean, he's a super exciting player. I'm not going to pretend like I was watching G League games, but everything that I've seen from him, it's like, wow, I can see where the excitement comes from. He certainly looks like an electric player. And Evan Mobley, you know, we'll get somebody on here to, you know, who's a lot smarter about this stuff than either you or I are. But, you know, if he's got all the tools, you know, you could certainly see where that could work for the Cavs. So I'm just so relieved that they got the draft position that they did and that we can be talking about, you know, Cade Cunningham and Mobley and Green and Suggs, and we're not trying to force ourselves to get excited by those guys that are going to be in like the 7, 8, 9 range.
Yeah.
Could end up being decent, but you know, Cavs finally caught a break here after the last couple of years. I know everybody's always like, oh man, when does Cleveland not move up? Cleveland, yeah. Look at our lottery history. Yeah, obviously we got the best prize of them all with, you know, the LeBron lottery and, you know, the Kyrie one. But like recent years, especially since these odds have been changed, Cavs have not exactly caught many breaks. So
the Kyrie one was the one that wasn't actually our pick.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that wasn't even the Cavs pick. That was the one that they had to pay Baron Davis like $29 million so they could get a 2% chance of winning the lottery with the Clippers pick. So,
and then they won like the 2013 one, which like they took Anthony Bennett. Say what you want about that being a terrible pick. That draft hasn't been very good. Like,
no.
Regardless of who they took, like, right. Giannis obviously was in that, so that's a little different. But like the top 10 of that pick, none of them are really all that good. Like,
yeah,
Oladipo, I think, was in that draft and he's okay. But like, yeah, they moved up in that one. They won the lottery, but winning the lottery is like the $5 scratch off, you know?
Right.
It's not, yeah. They didn't hit the Powerball.
In this current rebuild, this feels like a very good year to, get your odds, you know, move up as opposed to getting moved down. So, I'm excited for Thursday. That we'll see which way it goes. I'm really curious to see if the Cavs end up making any sort of a trade to get a second first round pick. I know there was that deal that was at New Orleans and Memphis made today. Sounds like that's probably going to take a very likely target for the Cavs if they wanted to try to get another lottery pick. That 10th pick is, you know, out of the discussion now. So that's certainly one that's going to probably significantly reduce their odds of getting a second lottery pick. But I could see the Cavs making some sort of move that, you know, could end up getting them a second draft pick on Thursday night. So that could be fun.
Okay.
Don't rush to go switch over to the Olympics as soon as you see Evan Mobley put on the Cavs hat, because they might not be done yet.
Okay, I'll take your advice on that one. Although I don't know that I'll be glued to the TV watching the draft anyways. So we'll see. But yeah,
I'll text you when it's time.
I appreciate you. That's all. I got Twitter. I mean, I'll be paying attention to what's going on. But
well, if you're on Twitter, you'll be.
I'll know before you do.
10 minutes before anybody watching.
Woj bombs.
Yeah, Woj. Detroit is tantalized by. They're intrigued with that became my favorite running gag. Is ESPN told him you're not allowed to tip picks anymore because you're ruining our TV broadcast. So he just started using vague language that you could.
It pretty much gave it away, but
right.
Didn't truly give it away. Yeah,
yeah, technically he was okay, but basically giving a middle finger to his employer, which I guess if you're Woj, you can get away with that. But
yeah, for real. Like, oh, well, we can't really fire you. You're the still the biggest insider in the sport. So
yeah.
Yep. All that's right. The way it goes.
There it is. All right, folks. I think that's going to do it for us. As a reminder, you could subscribe to The Nail in the Coffin on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most podcast listening platforms. We are also on waitingfornextyear.com. Some really good content up there. This week, I would encourage you to go check out Waiting for Next Year if you haven't been to the site recently. Some really, really good stories there. So give that a look. And I think that is going to do it for us. So for Travis Yulee, I am Tom Valentino. We will catch you next time on The Nail in the Coffin, part of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!